Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good day. My name is Glenn, and today I'm going to be reading from the Wednesday, June 26, 2024 edition of the Midland Reporter Telegram. Wellness Report for First Responders by Trevor Hawes, Editorial Director. Council approves using federal funds to purchase app that will grant emergency staff easy access to resources. First responders deal with difficult, high-stress situations on the job. When stress arises in life outside work, a cultural stigma within the industry may prevent them from seeking help. The City of Midland is looking to change that. City Council, at its meeting Tuesday, unanimously approved using federal funds to purchase the Cortico app for first responders so that they have easy access to wellness resources whenever they might need them. On his first day as the city's director of public safety, Charles Blumenauer talked with City Council how he learned about Cortico a few years ago at a conference and that he's eager to bring this resource to Midland. Blumenauer retired Friday as chief of the Midland Fire Department. I gave this speech every year to graduates of rookie school, and I'd tell families that they need to be there for their firefighters, he told the Reporter Telegram after the meeting. They see stuff that people don't see on an everyday basis, that they shouldn't see on an everyday basis, but they see it. And it's not just firefighters who have tough jobs. I don't think police get enough credit for the stressful situations they face, he said. As a 29-year veteran in the firefighting industry, Blumenauer said he wishes he had a resource like Cortico when he had faced tough times. Our first responders go through a lot of stressful stuff. They go through life issues, he said. There's a lot of things in this app that gives them access to help. Cortico will be tailored to provide wellness resources available locally on top of national resources that can be used. 20 staff at MFD and 20 at the Midland Police Department will be trained to offer peer support. App usage is anonymous, though Blumenauer told media that he can see what services are being offered, which will be beneficial in helping determine if trends are forming and thus showing where to put resources toward addressing common issues. The app is also available to first responder spouses and is free to use. Funding for the app comes from the National Opioids Settlement, which flows from the federal government to local and state governments. Blumenauer said the city is in the process of finalizing its contract with Lexapol, which offers the Cortico app. After the deal is complete, peer training will begin and first responders will learn how to use the app and what resources are available. Armory Interiors brings unique furniture to Midland by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Rhonda Mahan is bringing a new furniture and textile store to South Midland. Armory Interiors opened on Tuesday and offers a wide variety of items like unique furniture pieces and slipcovers. We work with local designers in Midland and Odessa, Mahan said. Everything here is customizable. The new business works with linens, slipcovers, and more than 900 different fabrics. Armory Interiors has furniture available on the showroom floor available, and although they are set up to resemble a living room or bedroom, the furniture set is made up of individual pieces. The fabrics on specific furniture, such as a couch or a throw pillow, are interchangeable with other slips. The store also offers upholstery. Armory Interiors has a slogan that they are made with thoughtful design. It's really special because an average mom can come in and pick their own design, Mahan said. If they aren't looking to buy furniture but want to spruce up what they already have, they can come in and choose their own fabrics. The store offers a one-on-one appointment between customers and staff. They can always provide private consultations to go through the furniture and fabrics on Mondays. We are so excited to bring upscale furnishings and textiles to West Texas, said Morgan Bommersbach, an opening team member at Armory Interiors. We pride ourselves in exceptional customer service and knowledgeable staff. Armory Interiors is located at 2612 West Front Street, Suite A. They are open from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesdays through Saturdays. Dollar General to open store in Wedgewood Park by B. K. Richter, staff writer. Dollar General is putting the finishing touches on a new store located at 2806 Midland Drive in the Wedgewood Park neighborhood. The new building is located on a 1.3-acre lot with a property size listed as 10,566 square feet. There will be 32 parking spaces available. According to Dollar General's website, the chain began in October 1939 when J.L. and Cal Turner opened J.L. Turner & Son Wholesale with an initial investment of $5,000 each. The first Dollar General store opened in Springfield, Kentucky on June 1, 1955, and the concept was that no item in the store would cost more than $1. Today, the company is a major discount retailer with more than 19,000 stores in 47 states. A quarter of Dollar General's merchandise still sells for a dollar or less. Ex-MRT reporter to release book on Baby Jessica Rescue by Ben Schaefer, staff writer. Lance Lunsford tells the whole story of the Jessica McClure rescue in his new book, Inside the Well, The Midland, Texas Rescue of Baby Jessica. The book chronicles the international media spotlight in the West Texas oil town and the tragedies that followed. It illustrates the aftermath rescuers faced as they navigated movie deals, international media, and scrutiny to become one of the first high-profile cases of PTSD among first responders, Lunsford said. Lunsford is a native West Texan. He was born in Midland and lived here until 1988. His family moved to Abilene and San Angelo before he went off to Texas A&M. Upon graduating in 2001, Lunsford started as a reporter at the Reporter-Telegram. He began on the police and courts beat, which overlapped with the Midland Fire Department. During his time, he developed strong relationships with firefighters in the city. In Lunsford's second year at the Reporter-Telegram, he was assigned to write a story on the 15-year anniversary of the nationally televised rescue of Jessica McClure. I interviewed Marie Petronella, who is like right next door to the McClure house, and as I was walking away, I realized there's something more to this story, and I was like, well, what is that? Lunsford recalled from 22 years ago. Originally, Lunsford perceived baby Jessica's story as being about a community that came together to achieve something great. As he continued to analyze the story, however, he began to uncover details surrounding Robert O'Donnell, the firefighter that pulled Jessica out of the well. O'Donnell took his own life near Stanton in 1995. Lunsford was to turn in a four-story package on the baby Jessica anniversary to Gary Ott, the city editor at the Reporter-Telegram at the time. Lunsford added a fifth story as a sidebar, which shed light on O'Donnell. Ott, who is highly knowledgeable and had a great eye for news, according to Lunsford, said he did not know much about O'Donnell's story. That stuck out to me. That, man, this story really isn't known in its totality. It's just known superficially as this rescue of a little girl in a well, and even today, people have this vague notion of it, but they really only remember that one piece of it. When you take it apart, it's got so much pathos and so many nuances of human frailty that really spoke out, Lunsford said. Media coverage surrounding O'Donnell and his struggles with post-traumatic stress following the rescue was not as plentiful as the rescue itself, Lunsford said. It had been told with a long version in a New York Times magazine piece that wasn't really picked up in Midland. Nobody really remembered it, Lunsford said. The OA, Odessa American, had covered Robert O'Donnell's suicide, but really briefly. I think it was even on an inside page well after the fact, he said. Conversations around post-traumatic stress disorder had become less taboo in the early 2000s, than that of the late 1980s and early 1990s following conflicts and military operations in the Middle East and American soldiers returning home from them. Lunsford met Vaughn Donaldson, who was with the Midland Fire Department in the early 2000s. Donaldson had gone back to school to study post-traumatic stress disorder. Donaldson also worked with O'Donnell through some of his struggles following the rescue. That really opened a lot of Robert's story to me, Lunsford said. Lunsford has published two books on the baby Jessica rescue. The first was published in 2006, 3 years after leaving the Reporter-Telegram, and the second in 2011. In this 2024 release, he takes a closer look at the success and validation of CNN's business and financial model on the backs of the baby Jessica rescue. The 24-hour CNN coverage of the rescue documented the events for the nation and shaped the way national media handles such events. The coverage of the baby Jessica rescue validated the idea of keeping cameras rolling on O.J. Simpson and his white Ford Bronco down California freeways 7 years later, according to Lunsford. However, he said there's more to the CNN story. When they do reference that, CNN being validated on the back of this rescue, they always kind of point to the fact that they were live there the whole time, but so were the other three networks, Lunsford said. CNN, a scrappy television news upstart in the late 1980s, had built a subscription model through cable television, whereas other major networks operated on underwriting models through sponsorships, Lunsford explained. While CNN kept cameras rolling on every minute of the rescue, other major networks were obligated to cut to commercial. They've been saying for 2 days now that at any minute this baby's going to come out of the well, and when somebody clicks over to a Tide commercial, you're going to CNN. You're not going to miss that moment, Lunsford said. Following the first two books, Lunsford still felt there was more to the baby Jessica story, specific to the CNN idea, the exploration of O'Donnell's story, and discussing the Permian Basin economy at the time and its tie-ins. Lunsford published the book through Texas Tech University Press. He is co-founder and senior partner at Groundswell Health, an Austin-based healthcare strategic marketing and communications firm. Inside the Well, the Midland, Texas Rescue of Baby Jessica will be available online at retailers like Amazon and Barnes & Noble in paperback and ebook. Its publication date is July 10th. Lunsford says the difference between his new book and all the media that has come out about the rescue is his book tells a total story about the people involved in the rescue and the ripple effects it created. How Bad is Ultra-Processed Food for Your Health? By Brooks Johnson, Star Tribune. As shoppers study food labels amid renewed concerns about the health impacts of processed food, General Mills isn't worried. After all, it's the flavor that makes the sale. Newsflash, people like food that tastes really good. General Mills CEO Jeff Harmening told an audience of investors recently when asked about the debate around ultra-processed foods and how it could affect the Golden Valley, Minnesota-based company. That's not to say consumers don't care about nutrition as well, Harmening said, but one of the things that General Mills does really well is make food that tastes good and is good for you. Research shows, however, that too much of certain tasty things may contribute to high rates of diet-related diseases like obesity, cancer, and mental health problems. Now regulators may start warning against eating too much ultra-processed food, broadly defined as having few or no remaining whole food ingredients, and industry groups are lining up in opposition. Starting next year, federal dietary guidelines could, for the first time, address the role ultra-processed foods play in healthy eating. That could trigger changes in federal programs and ripple through America's food industry, which makes billions selling processed foods like Lunchables and frozen pizzas to schools. Nearly 75% of the U.S. food supply is considered ultra-processed, according to the Institute of Food Technologists. Most foods sold in grocery stores go through some level of processing, including staples like milk, bread, and flour. Ultra-processed foods, said nutritionist Marion Nestle, are industrially produced foods formulated to be irresistibly delicious that can't be made in home kitchens. This category can include many breakfast cereals, yogurts, chicken nuggets, and plant-based meat alternatives. In a letter to the Federal Department of Health and Human Services earlier this year, General Mills argued, not all processed foods are nutritionally equivalent and do not have the same impact on health. Yet foods designed to be hyperpalatable with high fat, sugar, or sodium often displace nutritionally dense foods in diets, studies say. Food companies have positioned many of their products as health-conscious, such as heart-healthy Cheerios, but the main selling points for most packaged food remains taste, price, and convenience. The nation's leading food companies, including Kraft, Nestle, Hormel, Post, and Land O'Lakes, all sell products that fall into the ultra-processed category. University of Minnesota Nutrition Professor Joanne Slavin, who served on the 2010 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, agrees that processing is a necessary part of modern food production. If we get rid of all ultra-processed foods, food waste goes up, food costs go up, and people wouldn't be healthier, she said. To say avoid ultra-processed foods to prevent disease, that's really misleading. The ultra-processed debate comes right as the FDA is considering whether to regulate the term healthy on food labels or add warning labels for foods high in fat, sugar, and salt. Harmening said that wouldn't have an effect on General Mills' business, even as the company lobbies against the proposals. To the extent that consumers are more knowledgeable and care more about what's in their food, I think that's a benefit for us, he said. We're happy to compete in that environment. The NOVA rating system, first proposed in 2009, initially brought the term ultra-processed to a wide audience. NOVA describes processed foods on a scale from 1 to 4, from raw or minimally processed to ultra-processed. NOVA's rating scale climbs from whole foods and shelled nuts to culinary ingredients like oil and honey, then up to processed foods like potato chips and cheese, and ultimately to ultra-processed foods like fish sticks or protein shakes. A widely cited 2013 study on ultra-processed foods gave this definition: ready to consume are entirely or mostly made not from foods, but from industrial ingredients and additives, and are extremely profitable. Since then, hundreds of studies have explored the link between ultra-processed foods and health outcomes. Countries like Brazil and Israel specifically call out ultra-processed foods in government dietary guidelines. But in those studies, there is not a standard definition for ultra-processed food. Research that uses the same NOVA scale often places different foods in different categories. Industry groups like the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and the International Dairy Foods Association are seizing on the lack of a concrete definition to oppose regulation and potential misclassification of nutritionally wholesome foods. In a joint letter with fellow cereal makers Post and Kellogg, General Mills called it oversimplified criteria that ignores processed foods' safety, convenience, accessibility, and affordability. For now, a federal advisory committee is still pondering the question. What is the relationship between consumption of dietary patterns with varying amounts of ultra-processed foods and growth, body composition, and risk of obesity? It will take until the end of the year to finalize dietary guidelines for 2025 to 2030, which are used by public health officials, nutritionists, and federal programs that provide food assistance and funding for school meals. Slavin doesn't expect the committee to adopt any recommendations around ultra-processed foods. People will be very disappointed by that, she said. I think they'll say this is a really important issue, but we don't want to get it wrong. In the meantime, various studies are underway that could give more nuance to the connection between processed food and health. Many of them could generate more headlines that keep ultra-processing in the public eye and food companies on the defensive. We need to capitalize on this public awareness and this interest to generate the kinds of data that we actually need to make actionable changes, said Kevin Hall, a National Institutes of Health researcher. If it turns out, at the end of the day, that this concept adds nothing beyond what we already know, what makes up a healthy diet, we need the data to show that. Join Midland Health in enhancing health literacy. Your voice matters. Your participation is key in Midland Health's efforts to improve our community's health literacy and overall wellness. Health literacy is more than reading and understanding health information. It's about finding, understanding, and using that information to make informed decisions about your health. Your participation in the community health literacy survey contributes to the data needed to make positive changes in our community's health literacy. Your involvement impacts our community's health, improving patient outcomes through education and enhanced literacy. Your responses bring awareness and will lead to our ability to improve current processes, programs, and resources. To access the quick 2-minute survey, please visit the blog section of MidlandHealth.org or search for health literacy. The survey can also be found on the Midland Memorial Hospital Facebook page. We appreciate your willingness to contribute to our mission of improving health literacy in Midland and the surrounding areas. Rest assured, the survey is entirely anonymous and available in English and Spanish. We welcome the community to share and repost the surveys to gain as much feedback as possible. For further collaboration on health literacy with Midland Health, please reach out to Hillary Chase, hillary.chase@midlandhealth.org, or Taylor Weidenfeld, taylor.weidenfeld@midlandhealth.org. Hillary Chase is a patient education coordinator at Midland Health. Macias to lead IDEA Permian Basin Region by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. IDEA Public Schools has named Annette Macias as the executive director of the Permian Basin Region. IDEA Public Schools is public charter school network with a large presence in Texas. Macias, a Permian Basin native, will begin in her new role at the start of the 2024-25 school year and will oversee day-to-day operations, academic achievement, and develop strategies to enhance the region. Macias holds a Ph.D. in Education Leadership Policy from Texas Tech University, a master's degree in special education, and a bachelor's degree in Spanish and Multicultural Studies from the University of Texas Permian Basin. In her 27 years of experience in education, she has held administrative roles such as executive director for school improvement, director of student support, and principal. Macias has also worked as a bilingual teacher. She was previously working at Houston ISD. Dr. Macias is deeply dedicated to serving families and ensuring all children have an equal opportunity to obtain an excellent education, said Jeff Cottrell, superintendent and CEO of IDEA Public Schools. Her leadership and commitment to excellence are clear in everything she has accomplished in her professional career, and I have no doubt that she will lead IDEA Permian Basin to great success. IDEA serves two campuses in the Permian Basin, IDEA Travis Academy and College Preparatory in Midland and IDEA Yukon Academy and College Preparatory in Odessa. IDEA Travis currently serves pre-kindergarten through 10th grade. IDEA Yukon serves students kindergarten through 9th grade. Macias succeeds Bethany Solis as the executive director of the Permian Basin region. Solis will be the vice president of college completion at IDEA Public Schools. Midland man dies in Crane County collision on U.S. 385 by B.K. Richter, staff writer. A 40-year-old Midland man is dead following a collision. The fatal crash occurred at 12:30 a.m. Saturday at the intersection of U.S. Highway 385 and Tarpley Road. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Christopher Allen Robles was pronounced dead at the scene by Justice of the Peace Twyla Ward. Based on information provided by the DPS traffic report, it was revealed that the driver of a 2013 Peterbilt 388 failed to give the right-of-way to a 2012 Chrysler Town & Country driven by Robles. The driver of the Peterbilt was recorded as Jose Diaz Puig, 41, of Odessa. The DPS report said that because of the failure to stop, both vehicles collided and came to rest near the point of impact. Crash remains under investigation and no further information was available Tuesday. Midlanders prefer renting homes over buying them by Mella McEwen, oil editor. A drive around Midland may show more for lease signs than for sale signs in front yards. So far in 2024, the Permian Basin Board of Realtors reports 8,281 rental listings and 948 for sale listings. I do believe that some people are opting to rent instead of buy due to the current state of our economy, Kelsey Rasseur, PBBOR president, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. That is prompted not just by higher interest, but the cost of living in general, she wrote. At the end of the day, purchasing a home is always going to be a better investment, but election years can create some uncertainty. Given these economic conditions, I can understand how some people would decide to rent as opposed to purchase, she said. As for homes for sale, list prices ranged from $40,000, up from original list price of $24,500, and selling for $36,000, to a high of $2,895,000, up from the original list price of $3,195,000, and selling for $2,600,000. The average sales price was $425,623, and the median was $345,000. Days on the market ranged from 1 day for the lowest-priced homes to 571 days on the market for the most expensive homes. The average days on the market was 48, and the median was 25 days on the market. Prioritize foot health in summer footwear choices. Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. As the summer beckons people toward more outdoor activities, it's crucial to remember that a person's choice of seasonal footwear can significantly impact their foot health. Dr. Jerry Grime, a foot and ankle surgeon at Texas Tech Physicians, shared insights on selecting summer footwear to avoid pain and injury. The allure of flip-flops lies in their casual comfort and breathability. Walking in them exercises muscles in the feet, ankles, and lower legs, which are used to being supported and cushioned with structured shoes. Grimes said, the human being was designed to walk barefoot. This naturally stretches us out. While flip-flops protect a person from barefoot hazards like hot surfaces and bacteria, Grimes advised that flip-flops are best worn for short durations because they can lead to cramps and discomfort, especially if the Achilles tendon is tight. He said, transitioning from supportive footwear to flat, unstructured options like flip-flops requires caution to prevent stress fractures and muscle strain. When choosing whether to wear flip-flops, it's also important for the individual to consider the environment they will be in. For people who have normal sensations and strength in their ankles, wearing them, say, around a pool, walking in the mall, or something like that should be fine, Grimes said. The really thin ones have very little cushion, so you're going to feel the structure, the ground underneath you. For many people, summer is also synonymous with sandals. Grimes said a comfortable, secure fit and stability are vital in avoiding pain and injury. Features to look for include appropriate length and width, a tread which provides traction, adjustable straps, and a supportive insole and footbed. When it comes to arch support in sandals or other shoes, Grimes said there is no one-size-fits-all advice. A young, healthy person often needs no support in their foot, even if they have flat feet. If it isn't painful, it's not considered a problem. While inserts are one early-stage treatment to alleviate pain from flat-footedness, he strongly advised seeking medical guidance on the right type for the individual. One place people do go wrong is they think they can just buy a tall arch to try to support the arch that's already fallen, Grimes said, and that's never going to work because the arch wasn't ever meant to be pushed on. Though more relaxed and comfortable for summertime, flip-flops and open-toed sandals offer little protection from the risk of injuries. We don't want to use them around anything dangerous, lawnmowers, weed eaters, animals, those types of things, Grimes said. If anyone's worn flip-flops for any length of time, you know that stone always seems to find its way between your shoe and your foot. That could be anything sharp or pointy, and you could end up with a wound. So we want to be careful. For individuals with diabetes, going barefoot or wearing flip-flops or sandals are never good choices, Grimes stressed. I've had people come in with needles they didn't even know they stepped on, Grimes said. But even if they don't have neuropathy and a lack of sensation in their feet, diabetics don't heal like everybody else. And so if they get a wound, the risk of infection and wound problems is much more magnified. Beyond footwear, Grimes emphasized the importance of protecting a person's feet from skin cancer. Flip-flops and sandals expose the feet to the sun, so wearing sunscreen is a must. Grimes said every year someone is referred to him with a melanoma on their foot. Unfortunately, that is the most dangerous place that you can get a melanoma, he said. We don't know why, whether it's that we just don't notice them or whether they're more aggressive, but when someone has a melanoma on their foot, it's a very serious problem. If they get very large, it's very hard to be able to excise them and still save the foot. Grimes said by making informed footwear choices and prioritizing foot health, individuals can step into summertime with confidence and comfort. Obituaries. Manuela Salcedo Cantu, June 8, 1944 to June 24, 2024. Manuela has gone home to our Heavenly Father. She was a living mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, wife, sister, and friend. She was born on June 8, 1944 to Dulces and Simona Salcedo. She is survived by four daughters, Marta Valles, Jessie, Araceli Martinez, Alfredo, Tomasita Gomez, Raul, Rosa Valenzuela, and one son, Javier Valenzuela. She is preceded in death by Juan Cantu, husband, Felix Valenzuela, son, and Justin Dean Cox, grandson, and many wonderful and beautiful grandkids and great-grandkids. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Wednesday, June 26, 2024, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, June 27, 2024, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church in Midland. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Jackie Marlon Hayes, December 10th, 1955 to May 29th, 2024. Jackie Marlon Hayes, 68, of Midland, Texas, passed away May 29th, 2024. Jackie was born December 10th, 1955 in Abilene, Texas, to Betty Walls and Hubert Hayes. Jackie grew up in Monahans, Texas. While living in Monahans, Jackie proudly served on the Volunteer Fire Department and the Ward County JCs. Jackie is survived by his wife, Patty Watson Hayes, sons Josh, Heather, Corey, Ariel, and four grandchildren that called him Papa, Sophia, Desiree, Lincoln, and Grayson. Jackie is also survived by his brother Donald Hayes and sisters Susan King and Tammy Walls. He is preceded in death by his son Timothy Hayes, brother Ronnie Hayes, and parents Betty Walls and Hubert Hayes. The memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m. on June 28, 2024 at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. The family would like to thank all those that have reached out with their thoughts and prayers during this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Owen Keith Leffler, June 12, 2024 to June 19, 2024. Owen Keith Leffler was born at Midland Memorial Hospital to Craig and Megan Leffler on June 12, 2024 at 12:23 p.m. He brought joy and love into the world and to the hearts of his family from the moment he arrived. Owen passed peacefully in his sleep on Wednesday morning, June 19, 2024. Owen is survived by his devoted parents, Craig and Megan Leffler, and his loving older brother, Tristan McAllister, all of Midland, Texas, his paternal grandmother, Cindy Leffler of Midland, Texas, and maternal grandparents, Jay and Melissa Chestnut of Midland, Texas, and Glenn and Lila White of Lenora, Texas, also hold his memory dear. A viewing will be held on Wednesday, June 26, 2024, from 2 to 5 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held on Thursday, June 27, 2024, 2 p.m. at Midland Bible Church, interment immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Shirley Byram. Shirley Byram, age 88, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Thursday, June 20, 2024. She was born in Mitchell, South Dakota. A public visitation for Shirley will be held Sunday, June 30, 2024, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home with the Rosary at 7 p.m. A funeral mass will be held on Monday, July 1, 2024 at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church, 4601 Neely Avenue, followed by interment at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Please visit ellisresthaven.com for full obituary. Opal Small. Opal Darnell Small, 86, of Victoria, formerly of Big Spring, passed away June 21, 2024. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, June 29, 2024, at the Nally Pickle and Welch Rosewood Chapel in Big Spring. Interment will follow at Trinity Memorial Park. The family will receive friends from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, June 28, 2024, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Big Spring. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Librado Lee Antonio Fresquez, January 3, 1973 to May 15, 2024. Memorial, July 1, 2024, 2 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church, Chapel, Midland, Texas, 1906 West Texas Avenue, 79701.
Harmony Home, ask public for help with fundraiser. Shopping for back to school can sometimes feel like a chore. Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center is looking to make returning to school one less thing to worry about. From now until July the 10th, members of Harmony Home are asking the public to help them pack the backpack, an annual fundraiser asking West Texans to donate school supplies to lessen the burden on the children and families they are assisting. Harmony Home is a nonprofit agency that began in 1993 and is devoted to helping children who have been the victims of sexual and physical abuse. On average, the center helps more than 600 children each year. Community Education Director Amanda Allen said items are divided between priorities. Items such as binders, composition books, and folders are currently listed as high priority, while backpacks and rulers are a lower priority. The goal, Allen added, is to collect enough supplies to fill 200 backpacks. The items will be given to the children and their families at a private event before school starts. We have a big sponsor who got 200 backpacks for us, so backpacks and rulers are on the low priority. If people still want to donate those items, they're welcome to do so, but there are some things we need more than others. Residents who wish to donate to the fundraiser can be delivered to the center's location at 910 South Grant Avenue. Monetary donations can be made online, or items can be purchased online through a registry through Walmart. We know when the brain is in survival mode and the whole family is in survival mode, it's difficult to think past that moment, Allen said. Sometimes, if you can have someone extend a helping hand, it makes a tremendous difference. Obituaries. Douglas E. Ashmore, age 84, of Marble Falls, died Tuesday, June 18th, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Phyllis Aline Bynum, age 73, of Odessa, died Thursday, June the 20th, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. on June the 27th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Isabel Lozano Jr., age 76, died Sunday, June the 23rd, in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Julissa Marie Ramirez, age 15, of Odessa, died Wednesday, June the 19th. Mass will be celebrated at 11 a.m. on June the 26th at St. Mary's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Gilberto Valenzuela, Jr., age 60, of Odessa, died Saturday, June the 15th, in Odessa. Funeral service was held at 10 a.m. on June the 25th at the American Heritage Funeral Home, with burial immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud for June 26th, 2024. Pickles Goes Extra Mile for First Responders by Staff Report. An Odessa business is being praised for how it treats its first responders. At Pickles Restaurant and Bar, which has locations at 4301 East 42nd Street and 2901 East I-20 in Odessa, all first responders enjoy a daily discount of 15%, according to the City of Odessa, which recently highlighted the charitable business. Also, Pickles deems Wednesday as First Responder Appreciation Day. Tisdale sisters and co-owners Tammy and Donna agree on this special. Not everyone is cut out to do those jobs, co-owner Jamie Tisdale told the city, adding they would feed them for free if they could afford it. The first responders leave their families at home when rushing to an emergency, Donna said. They put their life on the line every time they take that call, and they do it without hesitation. To learn more, visit Pickles Bar and Grill. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org livestream. Partnership aims to conserve Pecos River by staff report. Jonathan Harshman remembers visiting the Pecos River watershed for the first time and feeling awestruck. And it wasn't only the area's natural beauty that affected him. He also saw things like Leon Springs pupfish swimming in their only natural habitat. It was just inspirational and amazing to witness, said Harshman, a Chevron public and government affairs advisor. And Chevron is helping the region restore and sustain its health through its support of the Pecos Watershed Conservation Initiative, PWCI. This public-private partnership aims to restore and sustain the health of the Pecos River, its tributaries, and adjacent grassland habitats in the Permian Basin. Why it matters. The 900-mile Pecos River runs from the forest of northern New Mexico to the dry lands of southeastern New Mexico and west Texas, where it joins the Rio Grande. It's home to fish and other animals that won't exist anywhere else in the world. The PWCI exists, in part, to strengthen the health of these habitats. Energy's role. Founded in 2017, PWCI comprises energy companies and public entities seeking to conserve the environment. The initiative strives to protect the last remaining populations of fish and aquatic species found in the Pecos River and the Chihuahuan Desert region, improve the health of existing habitats along the river, address water scarcity and quality, find ways to bring species back to areas where they've been lost, and to build up existing populations. More on that. Chevron's support of the PWCI goes beyond sponsorship. The company's employees volunteer their time and share their expertise to help the initiative succeed. For example, on Earth Day 2024, volunteers from Chevron planted native saltgrass at the Bitter Lake National Wildlife Refuge to help support water and soil conservation within the Pecos watershed. There are some really beautiful and special places that serve as a habitat for wondrous creatures in this area, Harshman said. It's neat to be able to conserve those for future generations. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org livestream. Movies in the Park set up to light summer screens in Odessa by Kathy Chateau. Hollywood is descending upon the outdoors in Odessa this summer as the city pulls the curtains open on its free and family-friendly Movies in the Park series. Next up, Elemental will be shown Saturday, June 29th at McKinney Park at 625 West Pool Road in Odessa. As soon as it gets dark, concessions will be available. A whole lineup of movies are planned on Saturday in Odessa throughout the summer, with July 13th showing Migration and July 20th spotlighting Super Mario Brothers at Sherwood Park at 4819 North Everglade Avenue. July 27th showcasing Wonka at Floyd Gwynn Soccer Field at 1015 North County Road West. And August 3rd featuring Sing 2 at the aforementioned McKinney Park. Don't forget blankets or lawn chairs, reminded the City of Odessa. Questions? Call the City of Odessa's Parks and Rec Department at 432-268-3568. Movies in the Park set up to light summer screens in Odessa by Kathy Chateau. Hollywood is descending upon the outdoors in Odessa this summer as the city pulls the curtains open on its free and family-friendly Movies in the Park series. Next up, Elemental will be shown Saturday, June 29th at McKinney Park at 625 West Pool Road in Odessa. As soon as it gets dark, concessions will be available. A whole lineup of movies are planned on Saturday in Odessa throughout the summer, with July 13th showing Migration and July 20th spotlighting Super Mario Brothers at Sherwood Park at 4819 North Everglade Avenue. July 27th showcasing Wanda. July 27th showcasing Wonka at Floyd Gwynn Soccer Field at 1015 North County Road West. And August 3rd, featuring Sing 2 at the aforementioned McKinney Park. Don't forget blankets or lawn chairs, reminded the City of Odessa. Questions? Call the City of Odessa's Parks and Rec Department at 432-268-3568.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, June 22nd, 2024. Elina Aguila wins 4-Star Leader Award in Midland. Upcoming senior at Midland High School, Elina Aguila has been awarded the 4-Star Leader Award at the Midland Young Leaders Challenge. Aguila was awarded a $3,000 scholarship and earned a spot at the 4-Star Leadership Conference at the General Tommy Franks Institute in Oklahoma in July. The Franks Institute's Midland Young Leaders Challenge is a summer leadership program that offers 30 high school juniors in Midland County an experience to interact with prominent Midland leaders, including General Franks, their website says. Quote, "The students and speakers were so great," end quote, Aguila said. Quote, "It was really nice to network and meet students across Midland and interact with them and exchange ideas," end quote. The program focuses on challenging students to build skills such as persuasive communication, character, and leadership development. quote, a lot of speakers talked about the importance of effective communication, end quote, Aguila said. Quote, that really resonated and helped me gain confidence in my public speaking, end quote. According to the 4-star leadership website, the program is built around General Frank's 4 stars of leadership: character, common vision, communication, and caring. Kip Kulmina, soon to be senior at Legacy High, was also a scholarship recipient. He won the op-ed writing contest and earned a $1,000 scholarship. Aguila was one of 30 MISD students chosen to participate in the program, which was held June 12th through 13th and had up to $6,000 in scholarships, along with offering a chance to advance to the National Conference in Oklahoma. At Midland High, Aguila is a member of the Spanish Honor Society, varsity cross country, and will serve as a senior class officer. She is currently participating in the Conservation Job Corps, a hands-on conservation internship program at the I-20 Wildlife Preserve. Aguila plans to pursue a career in conservation and wants to study environmental engineering in college. Fire chief retires, readies for move to City Hall. Friday was Charles Blumenauer's last day as chief of the Midland Fire Department, and he's ready to trade his uniform for corporate attire starting Monday. Blumenauer has been tabbed as the city's director of public safety, a position added by city manager Tommy Gonzalez that oversees the comprehensive safety operations such as animal services, the health department, and emergency services. Michael Tully, a 20-year MFD veteran, has been named interim fire chief. Tully previously served as assistant chief of administration, a position that manages personnel, training, and emergency management. While no longer directly at the helm of the fire department, Blumenauer will still oversee the staff he has come to call family after nearly 30 years of service in Midland. Quote, firefighting is what I've known for over half my life, end quote, he said, at a retirement event held Friday at Central Station in his honor. Quote, it was a calling for me and a way for me to give back to my community, end quote. The move from the firehouse to City Hall is one he's been preparing for. Gonzalez had adjusted Blumenauer's role to include more public safety oversight and offered him the opportunity to become solely dedicated to the position. He has also completed the Certified Public Manager program at Texas Tech University. The Director of Public Safety role is part of the city's larger strategic plan. Quote, as part of our strategic plan, our second goal is to have a safe and secure city, and that's my goal as Managing Director of Public Safety, to make sure we're meeting that goal. And we're going to do it, end quote, Blumenauer said. Quote, we're going to keep making animal services better. I'm going to make sure the new fire chief does his job, and we're going to continue to make the health department better, end quote. The former fire chief's final preparation for his new position is getting the right clothes, which he admits will be, quote, one of the strangest things, end quote, for him, considering he's been wearing a uniform for the past 3 decades. But he has a plan. Quote, my wife and I have plans this weekend to start buying more slacks and shirts and ties for me, end quote, he said. No more turnout pants, jacket, and helmet for fighting fires. No more double-breasted blazer with golden badge and bell crown cap showing he's the chief. Quote, kind of our weekend this weekend is to find some new uniforms, end quote, Blumenauer said. Summer doldrums send unemployment higher. Summer may have just arrived, but the season's doldrums are already hitting the labor market. The Texas Workforce Commission said Friday unemployment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, rose to 2.4% in May from 2.2% in April, and is just below the 2.5% reported last May. The commission reported all of its 26 MSAs reported increases in May as schools close for the summer and contract workers enter the labor market. Midland continued to see the lowest rate in the state, followed by Amarillo at 2.8%, College Station Bryan at 3%, and Austin Round Rock, Lubbock, and Odessa at 3.2% each. Willie Taylor, Chief Executive Officer of the Commission's Workforce Solution Permian Basin, sees the region's labor market as steady. Quote, the growth rate is consistent, end quote, he told the Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview. Quote, if you go back to June 2023, the non-farm job count was 120,200. Now it's 121,600. That's phenomenal, end quote. Employment may have slumped in May, but he said, quote, do we continue to need workers? Absolutely, end quote. In fact, he noted the number of employers in the Permian Basin has grown from 14,000 a year ago to about 15,000 today. And now hiring signs continue to pop up throughout the area. The area continues to grow as high energy industry wages attract new workers. The commission said Midland's natural resources and mining sector paid $1.47 billion in wages in the fourth quarter of 2023. For June's report, which will be released next month, Taylor predicted a rise in the labor force as high school graduates seeking summer jobs or new jobs and college graduates enter the workforce. Midland's civilian labor force dipped to 115,822 from April's 116,351, but is well above the 113,972 reported last May. The number of employed Midlanders also fell to 112,999 from 113,747 in April, but is above the 111,149 employed a year ago. The number of unemployed Midlanders jumped to 2,823 from 2,604 in April, and is equal to the 2,823 unemployed last May. Midland's non-farm job count fell 200 jobs to 121,600 in May, led by a 300-job drop in the mining, logging, and construction sector. The government sector shed 100 jobs during the month. The only sector to report gains were the private education and health services sector and the leisure and hospitality sector, adding 100 jobs each. For the 12 months from May 2023 to May 2024, Midland's non-farm job count jumped 1,700 from 119,900 for a growth rate of 1.4%. The government sector led with the addition of 800 jobs. The trade, transportation, and utility sector, financial activity sector, and the leisure and hospitality sector each added 500 jobs. The manufacturing sector, professional and business services sector, and other services sector each added 100 jobs. Mining, logging, and construction lost 600 jobs over the year, followed by the information sector, down 200 jobs. Private education and health services was down 100 jobs over the year. Statewide, the unemployment rate was 4% as the state set records in job count, number of employed, and civilian labor force. Texas seasonally adjusted total non-farm employment increased to 14,195,600 after 41,800 jobs were added. Texas seasonally adjusted civilian labor force grew by 35,900 people to reach a new high of 15,262,600. This included the addition of 32,500 employed Texans over the month. While Midland reported the lowest unemployment, the highest was in McAllen, Edinburgh, Mission at 5.7%. Midland unemployment, January 2024, 2.6%, January 2023, 2.8%, February 2024, 2.9%, February 2023, 2.9%, March 2024, 2.6%, March 2023, 2.5%, April 2024, 2.2%, April 2023, 2.2%, May 2024, 2.4%, May 2023, 2.5%. Preliminary numbers for May with April numbers in parentheses. Midland, 2.4, 2.2, Amarillo, 2.8, 2.6, College Station Bryan, 3.0, 2.6, Austin Round Rock, 3.2, 3.0, Lubbock, 3.2, 2.8, Odessa, 3.2, 3.0, Abilene, 3.3, 2.9, San Angelo, 3.3, 3.0, San Antonio, New Braunfels, 3.5, 3.3, Waco, 3.5, 3.1, Tyler, 3.5, 3.3, Dallas, Plano, Irving, 3.6, 3.4, Fort Worth, Arlington, 3.6, 3.4, Sherman, Denison, 3.6, 3.4, Wichita Falls, 3.6, 3.3, Victoria, 3.8, 3.6, Laredo, 3.9, 3.7, Texarkana 3.9, 3.7, Houston, The Woodlands, Sugarland 4.0, 3.8, El Paso 4.1, 3.9, Longview 4.1, 3.8, Corpus Christi 4.2, 4.0, Killeen Temple 4.2, 3.9, Brownsville, Harlingen 5.1, 4.8, Beaumont, Port Arthur 5.5, 5.3, McAllen, Edinburgh Mission 5.7, 5.4. MCPL encourages literacy with 1,000 books before kindergarten. Midland County Public Libraries launched its improved 1,000 Books Before Kindergarten program at the beginning of summer. The free program allows parents to develop early literacy skills in their children. The program is simple. Just read 1,000 books with your child before they start kindergarten, MCPL said. Each 100-book milestone will be rewarded with a small prize provided by the Midland County Public Library Foundation. Parents can enroll for the program on the Reader Zone desktop and mobile app and update books read and progress made. MCPL also announced the creation of the themed backpacks that adults can check out at libraries. Each book bag contains 10 books parents can read with their child. The project is made possible this year by a grant from the U.S. Institute of Museum and Library Services and the Texas State Library and Archives Commission under the provisions of the Library Services and Technology Act. Quote, TSLAC is pleased to recognize and support the important work of Texas libraries in delivering innovative information services that strengthen local literacy, workforce, and digital opportunity efforts, end quote. TSLAC Director and Librarian Gloria Meraz said. Midlander named to Public Safety Commission. A Midland man has been appointed to a statewide commission by Governor Greg Abbott. Dan Hoard was appointed to the Public Safety Commission for a term set to expire on January 1, 2030. Hoard is founder and partner of Headlock Investment Company, LP. Steve Sodgill, a partner at Winston and Strawn LLP in Dallas, was reappointed to the commission. The commission oversees the Texas Department of Public Safety, which enforces laws protecting the public safety and provides for the prevention and detection of crime. Midlander named to Public Safety Commission. A Midland man has been appointed to a statewide commission by Governor Greg Abbott. Dan Hoard was appointed to the Public Safety Commission for a term set to expire on January 1, 2030. Hoard is founder and partner of Headlock Investment Company, LP. Steve Sodgill, a partner at Winston and Strawn LLP in Dallas, was reappointed to the commission. The commission oversees the Texas Department of Public Safety, which enforces laws protecting the public safety and provides for the prevention and detection of crime.
Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 67-year-old Caucasian female in generally good health. In 2022, I was found to have asymptomatic atrial fibrillation, or AFib. I underwent electrical cardioversion in the hospital, but the AFib continued periodically throughout the past year, according to my heart monitor. 6 weeks ago, a 14-day Holter monitor showed a 65% AFib burden, with my heart rate ranging from 34 to 192 BPM. My doctor is proposing Tycosin, since metoprolol significantly lowers my heart rate. Unfortunately, my insurance will not cover brand name Tycosin, but it will cover the generic version. Are there any concerns about the generic version? Dr. Roach answers, AFib is a common electrical abnormality of the heart where the normal regulation of the heart rate is lost and the heart beats in a chaotic fashion. The heart rate can be variable and your range is concerning since 34 is very slow and 192 is dangerously high for a 67-year-old. Better control of your heart rate is essential. If AFib recurs after an electrical cardioversion, medication is usually tried. There are several drugs, and clinical judgment by a cardiologist is essential in choosing the correct one. I never prescribe these drugs. I defer to the experts. Tychosin is a commonly used medicine. All antiarrhythmic drugs have the potential, paradoxically, to create new rhythm disturbances. About 3% of the time, tychosin causes a dangerous rhythm called torsade de pointes, which is life-threatening. Most of the time, this occurs within 3 days of starting the medicine, so it is essential to be in the hospital when starting the medication so that your heart can be continuously monitored and you have emergency treatment at the ready. If a person gets through the 3 days without problems, which is usually the case, then medication is continued after the person is discharged. Because the brand name is more than 20 times as expensive as the generic version, most people do take the generic one. The generic version is the exact same drug, and a study on absorption showed them to be bioequivalent. You can write to Dr. Keith Roach at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Dear Abby, my husband of almost 40 years is not well. He has been a good provider, but his life stories are heavily laced with lies. That has been very difficult for me to live with. I believe he will die before I do, and I'm uncomfortable about holding a service for him. His obituary would be filled with half-truths and lies. Because of his work positions, it would be expected that we have a service. I wouldn't know what to say without the probability of repeating his lies. Have you any suggestions on how I could handle this? Dear Abby responds, as a matter of fact, I do. When a husband dies, the person who is usually responsible for the creation of his obituary is his spouse. If you want it to be truthful, do not repeat his lies. State his age and place of birth. Mention his parents and siblings. Say that you and his children, if there are any, are mourning the loss of a loving, caring husband and father. Omit anything that has to do with his work life. As to having a public service, no law says you must. You can have a graveside service for family only. And another dear Abby. Last week, I wasn't working my best at the laundromat. An ex-coworker, who I haven't seen in longer than I worked with them, and who never liked me, decided to sneak an unflattering photo of me. I'm guessing it was to show my old employer, who also never really liked me. This has shattered my already fragile self-esteem. I've been depressed and stressed about this, and I don't know how to let it go and move forward. My friends and boyfriends say, this person is jealous and I should forget it. I've been really low and struggling to do that. I hadn't run into either of these people in 8 years in our neighborhood, but I worry that they could spread this photo around and damage my professional reputation and business. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Dear Abby responds, listen to the good advice you received from your friends and boyfriend. You have blown this completely out of proportion. People, regardless of their profession, are not required to be glamorous at the laundromat. And another, dear Abby, I met a man and we started seeing each other, but I'm not really sure about him. He's a cross-dresser. I have tried to accept it, but I honestly don't think I can. It turns me off. I don't find it attractive, and I don't know if I ever could be okay with it. I don't know how to tell him. I don't want to hurt him, but I just can't bring myself to be sensual with him. What's the best way to explain this without hurting his feelings? I don't want to lose his friendship. Dear Abby responds, tell the man that you like him very much and would like to remain friends, but that you feel friends are all you are destined to be. If he presses you further or needs a reason, tell him the chemistry isn't there. It is the truth. You can write to Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.